I am Easton Moore, and today I'm going to be interviewing Gary Moore. He is my father. Today is March 14th, 2019, and we are in my room away from everyone. It's just me and him right now.
My name is Gary Moore. I am 67 years old, born February 29th, 1952 in Bradford, Pennsylvania.
What was the first event you remember of significance relating to the Cold War?
I was in kindergarten at Sixth Ward Elementary School in Bradford, and we had to do duck and cover drills. Duck and cover was where you got under your desk and pulled your hands over your head and squatted down, and that was a drill to do if you were under a nuclear attack.
Did your teacher explain that this was for a nuclear attack? Like, were you aware of what you were doing, or was it something that you just sort of did and didn't think much of until you were older?
The teacher never said anything to us about why we were doing it, but later on, yeah, I picked up on, hey, what's going on here? Why did we do that? Also, they would show us, both in kindergarten and first grade, cartoons on what to do if there is a nuclear attack. If you're outside, what do you do? They said you lean up against a wall, you dive into a ditch, and it was cartoon characters doing this, and it was aimed at children, and we didn't know what it was all about. I mean, 6 and 7 year old kids, how much do they know? But still, that's what the teachers presented to us. This was in the mid-50s, 1956, 1955, 56, 57.
How old would you say you were whenever you came to the understanding of what a nuclear bomb was?
During the Cuban Missile Crisis, in President Kennedy's administration, I think it was 1962, I was 10 years old, and I remember watching the events play out on the news with my parents, and I remember a few times just walking outside and looking southeast and looking to see if there were any planes flying by, looking to see if I could see anything coming. It was a very scary time for me. That was also the time when I realized what those duck and cover drills were all about.
What were your thoughts during the Cuban Missile Crisis? Did it change your perception on the world at that time? Did it change your day-to-day life during the Cuban Missile Crisis?
It changed our day-to-day life in that instead of watching the regular fare of TV shows, we had the news on as much every time the news came on, and everyone would sit around the television watching the news. It scared the crap out of me. It really did. Watching this, listening to all that was going down, seeing the photos of soccer fields in Cuba and hearing the president say, Cubans don't play soccer. Cubans play baseball. Those are Russian soccer fields. And it scared me. I think it scared my parents. My dad, inscrutable, nothing seemed to faze him at all. I think I noticed some fear in my mother. It was a few very, very tense weeks.
Coming out of the Cuban Missile Crisis, what were your thoughts on the world? Did you have, what were your notable feelings toward the Cuba, like communist Cuba and the Soviet Union?
I saw them as the enemy at that time, and I was so grateful for the way President Kennedy handled that. And I saw Cuba and Soviet Union as the enemy for quite a long time after that, because of the fear instilled in this 10-year-old kid.
How did you think, before the Cuban Missile Crisis ended, how did you think that it was going to end? And did you talk with your friends and like family members? Did you discuss with them and like thinking about how it was going to end?
I didn't discuss my feelings with anybody. And for a while, I seriously thought that we were all going to die in the next day or two. I felt certain of it, and I didn't know how to express my feelings to my parents. My dad would just say, "Oh, don't worry about it. Everything will be fine." My mom would probably, I don't know what my mom would have done if I'd talked to her about it.
Was there talk about this in schools among classmates? Did your teachers say anything about it?
At that time, I was going to a Catholic grade school, and this was real itty-bitty. There was kindergarten through eighth grade in four classrooms. There were seven kids in my grade, and it was kindergarten in one room, first and second grade in one room, third, fourth, and fifth grade in one room, and sixth, seventh, and eighth grade in one room. The nuns, the priests, and the brothers who were at this school and at this church were all Polish, all had been in Nazi concentration camps during World War II. They were, I don't remember them saying anything about this during that time, but looking back on it, I think they were as frightened as I was.
How long did it take for the effect of the event to sort of pass over you? Because I understand this is a very influential event to you and was very, it put a lot of fear into you. And today we have many events that seem important, like, and very relevant at the time, but past maybe a few weeks or months, they are forgotten. How long did this last in your mind, the Cuban Missile Crisis?
It lasted until the day that John F. Kennedy was assassinated. I was at school. The nuns had come out to ring the bell to end recess, and we were all lined up, ready to go back to class. And one of the nuns was crying, and another nun came out and said that President Kennedy had been shot. And that flipped everything in my head. I can't explain it, but the nuclear war or a Cuban Missile Crisis, everything just dissolved at that point, and all I could think about was why, who would do this, what was going on.
What was what was your life like in the immediate aftermath of the assassination of JFK? Here, better to further that, did it have notable impacts on Broken Arrow as a community? Maybe like your friends, your family, the school? Were there any noticeable changes or anything that you remember strongly from it?
Oh, yes. With all of the teachers, the nuns and the priests and the brothers being in concentration camps during World War II, I think everybody, myself included, noticed that they were visibly frightened. And I overheard some of them express concern that it's starting to happen again, meaning that the concentration camps may come back, the persecution of different groups of people may come back. They had a very difficult time in presenting a normal school day, presenting a normal outlook to the students, and a lot of us felt that.
LBJ was vice president to JFK. Whenever he took the reins of office, did you feel confident in his ability? Did you know who he was? Like, did you think he could be a good replacement to JFK?
I had no idea who he was. I was 10 years old, or 11 years old. I had no idea who he was. As the year went on, I discovered that, oh, okay, everything's calmed down. He must be doing a good job. And I could finally breathe a sigh of relief.
Around the time in the same year, 1962, as the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Berlin wall was put up. Did you hear much from that, or did you have any understanding of it at all?
I heard about it on the news. I didn't really know what it meant, other than the fact that that city was divided, and on the western side it was good people, on the eastern side it was bad people. And I really didn't know the impact that would have on Germany, the United States, or the world for that matter. I just knew that it went up, and there was people who wanted to get out of there but couldn't, people who wanted to get out of there and tried but failed, and I didn't understand why.
Where did you come with the idea that East was bad, West was good? Did you?
Well, I got it from the news. I got it from the American news, CBS, ABC, NBC. When the Berlin Wall went up, it was all over the news for weeks, and they were showing people trying to escape the East, East Germany, communist Germany. Trying to escape to freedom in the West. And I associated those words with good and bad.
Were you very involved? Would you say you're very involved with the news when you were younger? Because today, I'd say most people are fairly involved, having easy access to the news through their phones. Most families have TVs. It's odd to not have a TV. And during that time period, was it common for you to watch the news on your own or with your parents?
I watched it with my parents. We had at one time, and I think around this time period, we had a little black and white 17 or 19 inch TV on a cart, rolling cart, and we would roll that cart in to the little dining room table and watch TV as we ate dinner. And well, at the time we ate dinner, that's when the news was on. So we would be eating dinner and watching the news at least Monday through Friday.
U.S. direct U.S. involvement in Vietnam began in 1965. They'd been helping South Vietnam prior to that with military aid, such as advisors, among other means, but they began sending troops in 1965. Did this mean anything to you at the time when you were, say, 13, 14?
At the time, no, it didn't mean anything to me. I'd never heard of Vietnam. I didn't even know where it was. The only thing that I knew about it was the communist Chinese were backing the rebels from the north, and the United States was backing the government from the south, and that Vietnam was divided north and south. It didn't start to have an effect on me until, really, Walter Cronkite changed everything for me. The news reporters and the major TV channels would go to Vietnam and cover the war, and they'd come back with not just horrifying stories, but horrifying video of what was going on. And that's when everything started to change in my eyes as I learned more about it, as I watched more coverage of it. I started to think the new chant at the time, but the old chant now, "Hell no, I won't go."
When did you start seeing these videos of the fighting in Vietnam, and what did you think of them at the time?
I think it was 1966 when the government started pouring more troops and planes and everything into the country, and the TV channels would have their reporters on the scene embedded with the troops. And as the years went by, 1966, 1967, the Tet Offensive in 1968, the video and the reports kept getting, coming from Vietnam, kept getting worse and worse and worse on the news, till by the time I was between my senior year in high school and my freshman year in college, I went to 4 funerals of kids that I knew in high school that were killed in Vietnam. This little bitty town of Broken Arrow. At the time that I left there in 1970, it was only about 10,000 people in that town. They had 11 young men killed in Vietnam. The only reason I know that is in front of the public library, they had this monolith with the names of all of the young kids killed from Broken Arrow.
Do you remember any of the... Or did you know any of these kids who were killed directly, maybe indirectly? Were you familiar with them, or did you just know that they were from Broken Arrow?
One of them, Jimmy Pendergrass, he lived right behind me in a little house right behind the house where my parents' house. And when we were smaller, he was a year ahead of me in school. But when we were little, we used to play together. Another one, David Lucas. He was also a year ahead of me, but he was a member of the Catholic Church, and I went to school with him at St. Anne's Catholic School. When I was in the sixth grade, he was in the seventh grade. We were both in the same classroom. Another one, Bud Gaynor, was kind of a town hero in high school. He was a state of Oklahoma wrestling champion, and he got a full scholarship to wrestle at the University of Oklahoma, but he developed arthritis in his shoulder and lost his scholarship, couldn't wrestle anymore, lost his scholarship, dropped out of school, and joined the Army. And he came home in a box.
What were your thoughts whenever these fellow children and sons, these fellow sons who from Broken Arrow that you knew, like, personally, you had interacted with, what were your thoughts whenever you found out that they had been killed in Vietnam?
Well, first of all, it was extreme sorrow at the loss of people that I knew. I don't think anyone that young should have to go through the death of someone that they knew. But it also just solidified in my mind of how horrible and terrible war is. And it solidified in my mind that I would do everything in my power to protect the people around me and prevent the people around me from having to go to war.
Would you say that this is a very influential part in you being pushed towards the hippie movement, or at this point were you already strongly rooted in it?
This was when I decided that Lyndon Johnson wasn't such a good president. And then watching the 1968 Democratic Convention from Chicago and watching the hippies and the yippies, Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin and a lot of these kids close to my age and 20-somethings get beat bloody by the cops in the protests, and watching reporters in the convention hall getting pushed and shoved and beaten. At that time, that was the first time that reporters had these weird backpacks on and with antennas sticking up, and so they could they didn't have to be wedded to a cord. It was a power pack, and they could broadcast from the floor without having to they could wander freely. And these reporters were getting pushed and shoved and yelled at and hit. And Dan Rather was one of the reporters there reporting for CBS News, and you could see on camera where people were pushing him and trying to get to him and yelling at him, and all of this was coming to a head in my head. In 1978, ABC News put on a special called 1968, The Day the Earth Cracked, because of all these events that happened in 1968. The assassination of Martin Luther King, the assassination of Robert Kennedy, the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, the 1968 Democratic Convention, the election of Richard Nixon as president, and all of this, all of these events were happened in just that 1 year. It was a turning point, not for me, but for literally millions of people in this country.
When would you say the turning point towards becoming a full-blown hippie was?
That year, 1968, as everything started piling up, I saw that. In fact, it was a world in the world too. The Soviet Union, the Czechoslovakian Communist Party, elected some more liberal, more progressive leaders. And in the spring of 1968, the Soviet Union decided to crack down, and they pulled troops and tanks into Czechoslovakia. It was called the Czechoslovak Spring. And they arrested the leaders, and they put their own people in charge, and they cracked down on the liberal, more freedom movement of the Czech government. And in high school that year, we had our own Czechoslovakian Spring, I like to call it. In the winter of 1968, our high school principal slipped on some ice, fell, and broke his back, and he was out. And the counselor became the acting principal. And this guy was cool. He had more liberal views of everything. And kids, we picked up on it. And boys, we started to grow our hair a little bit longer. At that time, your hair could not be down past the collar of your shirt. You could not wear T-shirts to school. And boys, we started growing our hair out. We started wearing love beads or puka beads around our necks. The girls, their dresses had to be no higher than like 2 inches above the knee. The girls started wearing shorter and shorter dresses and skirts. They also started wearing pants. And we also started wearing jeans to school. That was not allowed. And when the principal, and it was, everybody felt more relaxed. Everybody felt more comfortable. But when the principal came back and saw all this, he cracked down on everybody. He called everybody who wore beads one day into the office and told them to remove them. He started checking girls' dress length. He started checking the boys' hair length. And if it didn't fit with the dress code of the school, he made us go home and change, or go home and not come back until we got our hairs cut, et cetera, et cetera. And it was back to the old regime. But that year was a changing point for me.
Taking a step back to the to Vietnam, what was your first memory of watching the fighting on TV? What is the most impactful thing you remember from watching the war in Vietnam on TV?
Actually seeing people get shot. Actually seeing people dying on camera. Because the reporters and the cameramen and the sound men were embedded in the platoons that went out on patrols. They were embedded in the companies that went out and did a push. Uh, the Battle of Hue. I think that was 1968. I'm not sure. That was one of the most bloodiest conflicts. The siege at Kaesong, again, that was, it shocked me. It frightened me. It